Hello everybody, it is the time of year to begin registering for one or two of my slow groups that begin in July. My slow groups are these special groups where I focus on one topic and we deeply unpack it over the course of 6 months. So these are highly nuanced, deep dive, advanced groups. These are excellent for those of you who have taken my 6-week course or who just want to focus on one particular topic through a somatic and trauma-informed lens. The two that are opening up in July, or will begin in July, are my embodied parenting group and my embodied nutrition group. The embodied parenting group is just like it sounds, learning how to parent from your body, learning how to ground yourself in your parenting so you're not parenting from a reactive, triggered place, but from a much more conscious place so you can actually find joy in your parenting instead of it being a total hellscape, like some of you have told me it is, and I've experienced it myself. The other group is an embodied nutrition group. This has been requested for years. For the past 4 years, after students complete my course, they say, "Can you please do a course on nutrition and make it longer than 6 weeks?" So finally, I can say, yes, you can, and I can, and I did. It is a 6-month unpacking of the intersection between trauma, nutrition, and somatics. How do we recover from stress and trauma via food? How do we relate to food as a being and not just some object on the plate? What's the biochemistry of food? Why is it not the best for my blood sugar to have toast, but lentils are just fine if they're both carbohydrates? All of this and more will be unpacked in this 6-month group. To register for these groups, please go to my website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click groups. Or you can click the link in the episode details below. Registration closes on June 1st. It is only open through May because we need the month of June to prepare everybody for July. I'm looking forward to this deep dive with you all. I'll see you there. On today's episode, I bring on my assistant, Marika, and we talk about how her life has changed and what she's learning through the lens of the somatic work. It's a pretty nice conversation.
It just got to the point where I realized this is both fight, you know, because I'm like writing and I'm angry and I'm, you know, and also fun because I wasn't really doing it for me. Yeah. And it was, just, and then, I, you know, I'm looking for feedback from people and I, you know, and I want people to, we're all on the same team, you know, and it just really, I got to way too myopic and angry every day. So angry.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast. I'm your host, Luis Mojica. I was sick and depressed until I discovered that I could make music. And then my whole life transformed because I began learning how to listen more deeply. Listen to life, to the people around me, and to my body. And that's when I realized that the body speaks through sensations, and learning this new language meant relearning my body and mind. I soon healed myself of many chronic conditions and then began teaching others how to do so as well. Holistic Life Navigation combines nutrition, self-inquiry, and somatic experiencing to help you release stress and trauma just by listening to your own body. This podcast serves as a place to share my experiences, as well as the experiences of many others who have healed and are healing through unique, unorthodox, and unusual ways. Your time to learn begins now. For those of you who don't know, Marika is my assistant and the operations manager for Holistic Life Navigation. When I was feeling the desire to work with more people and teach and do bigger groups, I knew I didn't have the capacity. And I speak about this a lot. Capacity compared to desire. We can desire something, want it, even be skilled at it, but do we have the capacity to bring it forward? I did not at the time. I could not. I was running a full-time private practice, and it was literally a full-time job just to schedule people and check my emails. So I was very bound to my emails, my schedule. So I had met Marika because she was hired a friend of mine introduced me to her, and she helped me with a record that I released called How a Stranger Is Made. This was 2018. And she was so great, and I just enjoyed working with her. And so I reached out to her and I said, do you do any personal assisting or know anyone who does? And she said, I could do it. And so she started taking over my schedule and emails. And then very quickly, I gained the capacity to start working with larger amounts of people, which is really what I always wanted to do. So she's been such a big part of my life. She's like family now. And I was so excited to bring her on and just kind of learn a little bit of her history, or help you learn a little bit of her history, because I know her history pretty well at this point. But it was fun to listen to her, how she's experienced this work that we teach and lead and guide and offer to people, and how she applies it to her experiences. So you're going to hear that in a moment. And I think one thing that this episode really inspired me to do is to create some kind of an intensive, I don't know if that's even the right word, maybe an immersion, where we can get together and learn how to not be so physically affected by the media, by what we take in, by politics, all these kind of things. So I'm not sure when I'm going to offer that or what that will look like. It might just be a podcast episode, might be a short weekend, maybe a long webinar, not sure. But just listening to her story and how she started shifting things in her body around politics and being triggered by social media and the media, it just felt exciting to offer that to more people, because there is this safety inside of us that we don't know is there. And Marika mentioned this really briefly, but it feels like that's something that happens to us rather than something that is in us. And so because of that, we naturally orient out toward the world to look for the safety. And when we're orienting toward certain systems and technologies and screens that are bringing us danger and threat and pain, we're not even orienting towards something that gives us some capacity to feel safe. So really learning how to reorient yourself to safety so you have capacity to be in the world is a pretty profound practice for a lot of us. Being scared and angry and overwhelmed doesn't contribute to more peace for yourself or others. And I don't say that to shame anyone. It's just a natural result of when we're oriented toward traumatic media and media coverage. So it's something to consider and think about. But let's dive into the episode and see what we learn. Welcome, Marika Malaya, to the podcast.
Hello.
Welcome, sweetie. So nice to finally have you here. I think you started working with me before I even had a podcast, right?
Correct. Well, maybe right around the time that you started, I felt
okay.
Like.
Okay, mm-hmm. Somewhere around there. I've been wanting to have you on, and we've had so many issues from the gods and goddesses and automatic nervous systems.
Right. I was going to say, also my nervous system.
So tell us a little bit about you. You know, most people that heard the past episode with you and Camille have a little idea, but if they haven't, how do you want to introduce yourself?
Gosh, how do I want to introduce myself? I guess I live in the Pacific Northwest, which I love. This is where I grew up, in a little town called Gig Harbor, Washington. It's like an hour from Seattle. My parents still live there. I was adopted when I was like 3 days old, so very, very young. From, you know, a white family, which led to a lot of learning for the last 46 years, and unlearning, just been great with this work. And so, yeah, I'm, you know, writer, mother, my son's 23, almost 24, which seems like a human age, like an adult human.
Like you have a real human in the world. Yeah.
I don't know how that happened, right? So I know, especially when all my friends start having kids, you know, 15 years later or something. So
you started early. He started before
20, us. 21.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But that meant I was also done before everyone. So
that's what I'm thinking right now.
I know. I was going to say I get to live my best 40s. Some people are changing diapers.
That's very, I have friends at 46 having their first baby. Yeah.
Just amazing. An adventure of a lifetime. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's, you know, I live with my husband and my in-laws, and just being reintroduced to the world of the suburbs, which apparently is a, thought I wouldn't like, and just loved it.
Oh, nice. Wait, so were you living in the city before?
Correct. Well, we were in West Seattle, but yeah.
Oh,
we
I didn't realize that. I was like, you were like a little to the outside of Seattle.
Yeah, just like 15 minutes probably from. Yeah. And so we, after the pandemic, it was like the reason we moved to where we were at was because we were within walking distance of everything and mm-hmm. life and, you know, restaurants and bars and people. And then it just didn't seem like, you know, with the pandemic and everything, it seemed like we needed a little bit more quiet. You know, I needed trees.
You know, one of my favorite things to talk about with people on the podcast is just I like to hear their language and their lens of this work and how it applies to them. And I mean, you've learned, you're with me every time I teach or mostly every time I do a webinar and you're in the membership. So, I mean, you do this work as much as I do in terms of this, the actual sessions and teaching with people. I'm just so curious. And actually, before I go there, I just have to say about the title that we came up with yesterday for this episode. Do you want to say it?
We kept having to push this out. And then finally yesterday, I got up early. I put my face on, you know, all the makeup in the world that would, you know, keep me from realizing I was on a podcast. But yeah, and I felt like I was all ready and everything. And then we had a snag and so we couldn't. So I was like, well, here I am. So we were going to call it Triggered But Beautiful.
Absolutely. So this episode is titled Triggered But Beautiful, which is actually a really good one because, you know, you never look not beautiful, not healthy. Like there's so many times you'll say to me, I was so triggered. I was so terrified about that. I'm like, you were, you know, you have a really good poker face.
A good freeze face.
Yeah. You have a good freeze. And it's very, you're blessed with a good freeze face. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm curious. I'm going to start by asking you, being adopted is one thing, right? Mm-hmm. Being adopted into a completely different culture is another thing. Mm-hmm. People that aren't seeing you right now, you're a woman of color. What's it like? I don't know if you even identify that term, but tell me for you, you know, what have you learned through this work around your adoption story or your upbringing?
I think what I learned the most was I think I've been in freeze since the beginning. You know, I didn't really ever think about what it was like being sort of a child of. The thing that I think that adopted people have in common is you're born into sort of someone who I think is probably in the grief cycle, you know, or it's often a heartbreaking thing. And then you pivot really quick if you're lucky, I guess lucky in a certain way, and you're somebody else's miracle, you know? And so, I do wonder what it's like because we, you know, as a mother, I know how connected, you know, I felt to my own child. So I don't really know what that break feels like, you know, from that side. But, it, you know, I can only imagine like how hard it was for my own mother, my biological mom. And then being raised in this family of people who couldn't have children. So, you know, I don't think they use the word blessing, but, you know, something like that. So something they were grateful for. And so, yeah, it's been a lifelong learning about like intergenerational trauma and that type of bathing. And, you know, you were the first one who sort of gave me that visual of sort of bathing in before you're born, you know, in whatever's going on in your mom.
Yeah. You know?
And so, yeah, that made me have a lot more questions. I didn't have a lot of questions growing up about being adopted because I was just trying to assimilate.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to be part of things and to belong to stuff and look like Cinderella, which was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know? But still really wanting that, you know, straightening the hair and doing all the, you know.
Yeah, I do. You know. I straightened my hair for like 4 years.
Oh, yeah. And after, you know, 20 years of straightening my hair, I did not turn out white. I was not a blonde. I did not have blue eyes. I did not
change,
you know,
your genetics.
I don't even have the body of like the, you know, typical, you know, what growing up, what we were supposed to look like, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think it's been, that's sort of the journey I've been on in the last few years, is really trying to dive deeper into those places that I didn't even think to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before. Which this work has been so good for me in that way, because I can ask questions and, you know, do the self-inquiry, you know, Byron Katie stuff without judgment.
Yeah.
Which I think has been really key for me, is just looking at things the way that they are, seeing how I actually feel, how I felt. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the repair part is where I'm at and I'm getting to.
I think that's what I love about what we're talking about here, the adoption experience. I love how you said your one situation, it's a grief, it's a rupture. Another situation, it's like a repair, and it's like a miracle or a blessing. And for people listening that don't really understand what we mean by that, there's this experience that happens when a fetus is growing inside of someone's body. And when that's happening, that person's experience is carrying the child or the fetus, whatever people want to call it. There's this, like when you said bathing, the fetus is literally being bathed in whatever hormonal experience that person's having. So you're thinking of, you know, your biological mother, and the pain, the fear, the shame, whatever it is, when you're either hiding a baby or adopting, giving one up for adoption, and your little body is being flooded with those hormones. And so what's interesting about that is when we're born, that's like a pre-verbal, like womb trauma, it's called. Mm-hmm. So you don't even know, you don't have content for it or context. It's not a memory. It's like a felt sense. Did you have that felt sense growing up, even though you were in a family that was really nurturing and loving, like, or did that wash away quickly?
No, I think I've always had it.
What was it like? Like, what did it feel like?
Well, it didn't, because I didn't feel things, you know, which is, I think, a very protective, you know, thing that the body does. But I distinctly remember if people would bring up being adopted, or it was through a perspective I wasn't really into, you know, it was always like, you're so lucky, you know, and I didn't. They're just my parents. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, of course, you know, when you're a kid, you don't walk around going like, I'm so lucky. They're great parents. But I do think, looking back, I can see how I did not enjoy being in my body. And I don't know how much of that was attached to, you know, having this body given away. or just not ever feeling like I was in a home space, you know, because it's very different to go from American Samoa to Washington State.
Yeah. And you were actually, you're born in Samoa.
Correct. And then my parents lived there for a couple of years after that. So we got to actually be on the land, and I got to, you know, I have pictures from my first birthday party, which my biological family, you know, was at. And
So they actually had a relationship to your biological family in that extent.
Yeah, somewhat. And then we moved. So I never thought, before I met you, I never thought about the land that I was from and what that might mean.
Yeah.
You know, but I am so drawn to, you know, just the water and the ocean. And it's definitely the place that I can go to regulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
It feels like it's a being or something that's there to support me. So that's something that I at least brought with me.
Yeah. Well, for people who are listening around that experience of not really ever feeling your body because of so much, you know, discomfort in there, what are some things that you've been learning or applying or discovering that have helped you feel into your body? What do you employ? What does that look like?
Some of the exercises that we've done in the course, you know, the finding the safety, that was something I'd never thought to look for because it seems like it's something that happens to you.
Yes.
Not something that you can encourage or ferret out, you know, in some way. And, you know, I realized that all the times that I can look back when I was unconsciously didn't understand this work, but I was in my body, they were all incredibly painful, mm-hmm. you know, experiences that I did not want to be in, mm-hmm. you know. And so, yeah, I understand why I did. I don't know if it was an overcoupling or, but I understand why I did not like getting back into my body at any moment, right? Because all the examples and the evidence that I had was that it's not my favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, what I've done since then is just, and adopting language for what it is that I'm feeling and fostering relationships with people where I can talk about that stuff, you know, and talk about how I'm feeling rather than what I think I'm feeling, you know.
Or
you know, just being that we're in such a, thank you to the collective trauma of the pandemic, we're in a very, like, everyone's very pro therapy lately, mm-hmm. At least that I've seen. And that was one thing that came out of the pandemic that I was really happy about, was so mm-hmm. many people that I know have jumped into some kind of work, inner work. And so it feels a little bit safer to share those things with people. You know,
I noticed that too. It's like being paused and having to be at home for so many mm-hmm. months, people are like, I have trauma. I have, there's something here that I've been working away from and now I can't work. I'm stuck here.
Right. On top of we're being traumatized.
On top of actual collective traumatic
experiences. It's like a trauma cake. And I love cake.
But yeah. How many layers? How many layers is it?
I don't know. 100. Yeah, no, I absolutely, I thought I would like being in my body after I figured out how to, and that was like the biggest joke of all. Like, I'm funny, but that was funnier.
I think, like, that's important for people to hear, because we think we have that whole thing about, like, become embodied, be mindful, feel settle into yourself.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you feel pleasant.
Yeah, none of those quotes say, because you're going to feel good about it.
Exactly.
None of it ends with a party, you know.
Yeah.
It for me, it lets me live more authentically, you know. And for me, that means being my actual self and being curious about, you know, if I'm showing up authentically to things, you know, mm-hmm. which half the time is not wanting to show up at all.
Yeah.
But understanding that that's okay.
See, that's important when you say it lets you live authentically, because some people might think, well, what does that mean? And, you know, like, when I hear you say that, I think of when we do our programs and our sessions, and I always say, mm-hmm. let's settle into our body. And remember, settling in doesn't mean feeling good. We're just seeing what's there. Mm-hmm. If you're settling in, you notice, ooh, there's some pain here. That's authentic. You know, if there's joy, that's authentic. I think what's profound is how culturally and habitually we literally live in such a way that keeps us from feeling what is authentic inside of us. Like you just said, what's usually authentic is you don't want to do the thing you're doing. So how are you finding that shifting? Like, what does that look like for you?
I mean, honestly, it's acknowledging negative things and a no, saying no. I didn't realize how much of my whole life had been fawning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In really sneaky ways sometimes, too. Like, it would be like, I look back and I'm like, oh, you just gaslit yourself for like years.
Yeah.
You know, feel that way. No, you shouldn't feel that way. We don't feel that way.
Yeah. You know? That's right.
And then
that's
I would go, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. You know, just sure. No problem. Oh God, why do I say that so much? Yeah. Sure. No problem.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a problem.
I think whenever we say no problem out loud, that means it's probably a problem, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, or it's just reflexive. Like, I just have this reflexive. I have a reflexive yes, and the authentic person in me sometimes needs to say no, you know. Yeah. And am I okay with people being disappointed? That's the difference now for me as well. Yes. It's not that I love it, though. Of course, I don't want to disappoint people. Of course, I don't want to make people angry or uncomfortable or, you know, but I think living from the perspective of, I'm never going to cause negative ripples in the world ever. You know, that was not, that was not real.
I think that's been the most profound thing for me as my work has become more public,
is learning that I'm going to just offend and trigger and create perceptions in people's minds I have no control over. And can I be at peace with that? Mm-hmm. And for me, I wasn't at peace with it for years. And so I wasn't open to even having a social media page. Right. And then I really had to build capacity for that disappointment. Hey, my friends, if you want to integrate the work that you hear on my podcast into your lives, including nutrition, somatic experiencing, self-inquiry, and learn how to build the capacity safely to release stress and trauma, then my 6-week course is for you. My final course of this year is on October 3rd, and registration opens up on September 8th. That's pretty soon, a couple weeks away. So if you're interested, go to holisticlifenavigation.com and click on the course. Everything you need to know is on that page, including a waitlist if you know you want to sign up, or an intro webinar that you can register for free to learn more about the course. Again, go to holisticlifenavigation.com and click on the course. Now let's get back to the episode.
Well, you have to build so much capacity for social media. I mean, this is where you and I met.
Yeah, right.
Was over. Well, I don't know that we met over social media, but
we met through it.
Right. And it was for your music page. And yeah. Which is a little bit kinder because like people either love your music or not, right? It's not people are fans or not fans. With somatic work, you're working with so many different individual bodies mm-hmm. that are gonna react to, you know, whatever it is. I've had people reach out about you. Mm-hmm. Why does he do this? Why does he have the things on his face? Does he, you know, mm-hmm. is he white? Like, you know, because then they want to determine whether you can wear that thing on your head. They want to determine whether you can speak, you know, like there's so many different ways that we can be perceived. And
how do you handle those questions? I'm curious. Because I don't, like, the beauty of you is I don't have to see those anymore. Unless someone DMs me, I just don't see those. So how do you handle that?
I start making memes to just send people.
What would the meme say or be?
Right. No, I mean, the meme would just be a mirror. Welcome to the work, you know.
I love it.
Usually I just, you know, with kindness and curiosity or whatever. Like often if I'm annoyed by it, I will just end it with a question.
Oh, nice. I love that.
You know, like, you know, just so I can also be curious rather than just be like, oh, this person, you know.
Good for you.
Because what I don't want is to take other people's, you know, negative or whatever energy with me throughout the day. I can do that on my own.
You can do it on your own, right?
I can make or break my own day, so I don't need other people to, you know. So that has been a good thing, being your line of defense, you know, email line of defense, in that I don't take things as personally anymore, and I don't assume everybody else does too. And if they do, that's them.
Yeah,
that's their thing.
What about me triggers people the most, would you say, if you think in your mind of all the things you've gotten?
I had a lot of people during, I don't know if I should say, well, okay, I'm just going to say it. I had a lot of people being like, why does he love Trump? Because like one time or one or two times you used it as him as an example.
Oh, right.
You know, remember we were talking about that Byron Katie like video about Trump and how, you know, and it was just a very interesting pivot for me, at least, in how to look at a person like him. I don't know anybody like him in my personal life, which is, it's nice.
Yeah.
But it was just, I had a lot of people who assumed, you know, because you didn't use him in the right, you know, in their minds, mm-hmm. they're like, there's only one way you can use him in an example.
Right.
And none of that can have humanity, you know?
Yeah, I love that you said that. And just for context, people listening, I like the idea of like Luis loving Trump, you know? And where that might go in people's heads right now. Mm-hmm. And what you just said was humanity. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, there's this quote. I'm trying to think who it was. I can't remember the exact how it exactly goes, but it essentially means, I'm not going to say it because I'm not going to say it right. I'm going to lose it. But it essentially, it's that thing of, do I attune and become the very thing that I want to shift, right?
Exactly.
So well, if I'm and hating
I
felt, Trump...
And I had the same thing for me, though, I see it happen in the courses, and it happened for me as well, which is I started looking at myself through this new lens, right? Somatic lens, which gave me so much grace, right? And and a lot more runway than I used to give myself before I'd start beating myself up, And then I see, you know, and so many people are in the course because of their mom, their dad, their, you know, generational trauma, like their kids, their, you know, it's a relational, like a relation problem, not problem, but like issues that they're having. So they start seeing themselves through that same perspective. And then they start attuning and seeing their family members like that. They start seeing the people who hurt them, you know, through this lens.
That's right.
It doesn't give abuse or anything, you know, like a pass, not like that. But it's just, if this is the way that I'm triggered, other people are also triggered. If this is the way I was raised, those people were probably raised in a certain way, you know? And so it seems like it can ripple out a little bit in that way. Again, not to say that, you know, not to give abuse or any of that type of thing a pass, but just to understand that it's more than just that one thing.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's what I love, because you don't, you know, there's a difference between judgment and like having a boundary. You know, I can say, you know, the way you talk to me doesn't work for me. I'm not going to hang out with you. I don't then have to hate you or have a judgment about you to hold that up. I can just say, love you as a person. Don't want to be in a room with you. And I think what I love about this reflective work is, you know, when Trump became president, I don't think I've ever talked about Trump once on this podcast. That's how much I love him. When he when he became the president, the first thing I did was think, where am I like him? And that became my ongoing practice for his entire 4 years of presidency. Where do I do that? Where do I do that? And it was everywhere. There was somewhere in my life that did the same thing he did on a different level. And it just helped me not have this dopamine hit of like what April Harder talks about, like that narcissism, that thing of I'm going to just focus on why he's evil and what's wrong with him so I can feel a little distance from that sense of myself. I'd rather not. So I wonder, this is why I like you so much. This is why I think we became friends so easily, because you're someone that's not easily offended. You don't hold on to identity very, very close. Like, how did you, what's that about? Like, how did your life take you to that place of being so kind of open and curious?
Well, I think, I mean, to be honest, I think it's probably from being the opposite for and seeing where that got me.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Because I think that, well, I keep saying, looking back, a lot of my life was fawning and wanting to belong to something and then sort of like never finding it. And, you know, the myth of self-sabotage, like I was just like the self-sabotage queen, you know, and the closer I've gotten to what feels like really me, you know, and sort of an unapologetic me, like that's, things have just gotten more in aligned, you know, have gotten more aligned. And it's a lot easier for me to be curious about somebody that everybody hates, you know, mostly because what I find happened, because I did not come to this work until, I don't know, year four of his presidency. And that was after 3 years of freaking out on Facebook with everybody else and kind of just doing nothing. It was the loop. And I realized it was like the 3 years of re-traumatizing ourselves over and over and over again with the same posts, you know, and reading the same posts and seeing the freaking out about what was going to happen in a real, you know, in a real and unreal ways. And so once I saw people on, and I'm going to say this, but it's not how I feel now, my side, you know what I mean? Once people on my side were displaying the same kind of dehumanizing of the other side.
Yeah.
Then I just sort of saw how we were all just the same, you know. Obviously, that to me, I have a little bit of issues here when it comes to like, you know, human rights and the rights of women and and people of color and stuff. But I also realized I was just attuning to the stuff that hadn't yet happened. It was either stuff from the past which was evidence to me.
Yeah.
Which was evidence to me that this was going to happen again. And then I was living in this, it's already happening.
Yeah.
And not in the present, where it wasn't happening. And I could actually be doing stuff. I could be voting. I could be donating. I could be like you know, grassroots organizing. But instead I was just freaking out about the future.
I love that. So you were literally freezing out of the, as a result of orienting toward this essentially expected painful thing that was about to happen.
Right. Which it, to me, it was going to happen to everyone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, and I think there's a lot of people who are still in that, who still live from that every day, you know?
Yeah. And well, it never ends.
Well, and it doesn't. It like, never ends.
Does it? I mean, if you think of your life before Trump, there's always something to attune to that's going to be painful. That's kind of a guarantee, isn't it?
Right. You know, one thing that I hoped that his presidency brought was sort of illustrating how much of this is just part of a system that isn't, at least for me, working, you know, and rather than like, I have a hard time with the savior thing and the scapegoat, like it's one person cannot possibly save, you know, everyone.
Agreed.
And so when I kind of realized, because I felt like I was trying to save people, you know, really, you know, because there's so many things that were threatened, you know, at the time.
This is exactly what I say about the world is bigger than your nervous system.
Exactly.
You know, it's like literally, it's so much bigger than your nervous system. So you can't be in all the places. You can only respond to your place. Doesn't mean you don't have compassion or you're aware of it, but it's actually the body being in that stress response against multiple things in the world. It immobilizes you. It shuts down the body.
But I also realized it was, when I'm thinking of Facebook, like I posted every day, like people, you know, people would always like wanting to know my opinion and wanting to, that type of thing. And it just got to the point where I realized this is both fight, you know, because I'm like writing and I'm angry and I'm, you know, and also fun because I wasn't really doing it for me, you know,
absolutely.
And it was, and then, you know, I'm looking for feedback from people and I, you know, and I want people to, we're all on the same team, you know, and it just, it just really, I got to way too myopic and angry every day. So angry.
Well, what moved you out of that? Because 3 years of that is pretty intense. Like what was the moment or the practice or the thing that helped your body say, oh, he's still president, so you're 4 and I'm feeling better. Like tell us that. Because I know a lot of people are thinking, well, what'd you do?
I mean, they're not going to like the answer, but I was sitting in our family beach cabin on the Oregon coast, and we can't get internet there.
So your supply was cut off.
So I was reading books. I was day napping. I was going to lunch with my husband. I was, you know, we were just having the greatest time. And after a few days of that, I was like, maybe I should get off Facebook. Like his face, I think his face was very much like that's ever going to happen. And I took it off my phone. And then in 2020, we were already working together. In 2020, I was just like, oh, I'm going to have to watch like a whole other, like, you know, this whole other election, you know, all this whole thing. I'm like, I can't. So yeah, I just did like a post, like I'm out, and which I didn't need to do.
I had to freeze that. Cause that's important to me. Cause I love when you said I have to watch a whole other election. Cause if we think about this experience of you on the coast and you don't have internet, this was an experience of you attuning to your own reality. You know, you weren't attuning to this pain, this anger, this kind of like mob mentality. You were attuned to your own experience, and there was this peace there. And what I love about this is a practical example for people listening is like I'm thinking of the same thing you're saying of I don't have to watch the whole thing again. I remember when the elections were taking place, I voted, and then I laid in the bathtub
And I just I had all the windows open. I was just kind of really feeling into my sense of self. And it was this place of I can't decide what happens here. I made my decision and now I'm just gonna enjoy my life until the next thing happens. And it was just this sense of peace instead of watching and waiting and all the tidbits and the Twitter and everyone's discussions and attuning to their experience.
I also think that because we put ourselves in that highly adrenalized state of constantly taking in this information, getting angry, posting your own thing, getting angry, you know, just like the cycle. It was the first time I just had been out of that. And I think my body actually got to relax for real,
yes.
You know, and yes. I could kind of get that adrenaline out, you know,
yeah.
Actually rest, like actual rest and not like picking up my phone when I wake up, you know? And so it was like, oh, my body's showing me what it is, that what it could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not on Facebook. I mean, you know, I'm not on it anymore. I do Instagram. But now I have kind of more rules around it so that I can just protect my energy. I also realized I was posting in a fawning kind of way because everyone's posting about this huge thing that just happened, another shooting, let's say.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, I don't want to see that stuff and I don't want to post it. I'm going to look at it through my own lens.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be part of this. But if I don't, maybe people will think I don't care about it. Maybe yes. people think I'm trying to bypass like feeling about it.
Yes.
And so now I'm like posting because I just don't want to look like a jerk, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that because I think that's what's so interesting to me about social media in particular is I was thinking about this today, how when we post or repost something that's traumatic, you're literally adding another image of trauma to someone's lens.
Exactly. Right?
And so when you have someone in a fight or flight response because they read something and really scared or angered them and they want to share it, there's this innocent reflectiveness of, I want to share this and orient, and we all want to agree this is wrong. There's that thing we do. Yeah. And simultaneously, there's, you're actually just contributing to this collective charge of pain.
Exactly. I look back and see how much I did that. I don't regret it. It's part of the learning process, but it is hard once I saw it in myself to not see it everywhere else.
Yes.
And so I really had to reorient who I felt like who I see in my feed every day, like what, because I also don't need to be looking at the same, it's like literally the same post. Mm-hmm. Like 40 of my friends will all post it because it's like relevant or, you know, you thought it was. And I just decided, I mean, I still do post some political things, but my rule now is if I'm posting reflexively because I'm angry, if I'm reposting something that I've seen a few times, you know, in my other friends' stories or feeds, I just go outside instead.
Yeah, I love that.
The door to the outside is right next to my desk. So I, you know, if I come back and I still want to post that, fine. I generally usually don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually like, oh, I just got that adrenaline hit and I'm mad about, you know, this. And it's really more I'm mad about the state of America. And I'm probably not going to solve it with a story in Instagram.
Right. You know? Well, I love this example because this is another great example of pendulation, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're there on the computer, you see something, you get a charge, and instead of contributing and staying in the charge, you pendulate to something more regulating, like outside. And why that's so important for everyone listening is it isn't, again, to deny a situation in the world. It's to literally attune to something of safety in your reality. Mm-hmm. So your body has the space to then decide, what's my contribution? And then your contribution that day, like sometimes for me, it's literally being kinder to somebody. You know, I go into town and I think I'm going to be extra slow or open my heart a little more or smile a little extra when it feels right, not fawning, but actually connecting to someone's eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's my contribution today instead of reposting something painful. So I think it's fun to kind of play with how can I contribute in a way that's the counter vortex of all this trauma response we're getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I think that the outside is just the medicine for any screen related issue. Mm-hmm. So, which wasn't how I felt before because we didn't live in a place where I could, you know, we could drive to the beach pretty quickly, but couldn't just step outside and be in like nature. And now I can. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very, nature is, you know, a healing tool, which is fun. what really wonderful, the trees here, you know, that's the thing that I love about the Pacific Northwest is we are flush with trees. Really
yeah.
good ones.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that we were going to talk about medical trauma, but we ended up talking about vicarious trauma, you know, the things yeah. that we see through other people. And I think it's going to be great for people listening because I think navigating politics and world events and social media are consistently difficult. And I want to do, this is inspiring me to do even a deeper dive just into that practice.
Well, and podcast. Even just practicing, like, what is it like to expand your capacity to not be on these things?
That's you right.
know? Sometimes it's like what I found helped for so many people was, the first step was I took it off my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just, and then just see how that feels. Cause you can always add it. You can yeah. always add it back. You know, just see, and like, I was looking, I do like data. So I was looking at like my data of how much I was on my phone mm-hmm. after I took that stuff off. And it was just like mind blowing. I actually read a book like with words.
not just a picture book.
Yeah. Not just an article online, which is still reading, but you know, it was like, oh, a book.
Yeah. You know? I love that.
Or, you know, or I just like do more. I do more things outside, which is honestly nothing, but
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, I like going outside and doing absolutely nothing, but I think that that's contributed more to my healing and being more authentic as a person and being mm-hmm. able to show up for people in this work, you know, more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So is there anything you want to close us on? Is there any favorite practice or something really interesting you're up to, or even if you want to talk about what you're going to be, doing in the membership, you know, just people have an idea of what your role is in that container. It's up to you, whatever you want to talk about.
Sure. In the membership, for membership peeps and future membership people, I think on Fridays, I'm going to be hosting just a dance battle. No, I'm kidding. that would be cool though.
Karaoke. I thought it was karaoke.
Yeah, it'll be, I'm still very unclear on that. I think of it as a defrosting, right? Like mm-hmm. We're going to be doing like 90 minutes or so of getting together and doing the things that we've either been putting off, you know, the things that we know we need to do, bills, all my writers out there, writing, mm-hmm. you know, I've been working on, the closer I get to the end of this project I'm working on, the less I work on it.
Understood.
Yep. And so, you know, or meal prep or meditation or like, you know, it could be exercise, like it could really be anything, but just holding space for doing those things that we don't necessarily love doing or that we really do love doing, we just don't have time for mm-hmm. together. Collectively, you know, over Zoom, but still, I think it's going to be fun. And, you know, I think it'll just be nice to know that on a Friday, you could get some stuff done that you've been avoiding and it could be a little fun and with some friends, you know.
I think it's brilliant because I remember in college and in high school, but especially in college, that was my favorite thing where we'd all kind of pile in 10 of us or so into my friend's house. We would just work on our artwork or our homework together. Mm-hmm. And this co-regulation of just kind of not even talking, but kind of parallel working or studying, it was so settling. So when yeah. you said, let's all get together and do the thing we don't want to do all week together, I was like, this is brilliant. This is a great way to move through freeze. So I can't wait to do those. It'd be awesome. Yeah.
I think it's going to be fun. And I am excited for some kind of dance party.
We have to do karaoke. I'm so wanting to, because all we need to do is get, you know, share screen, play mm-hmm. the song, and then yeah. the person sings. You know, it's not that difficult. Barring technical difficulty.
I'm like, it's not that difficult, I guess. You know, with we could have aid, you know, an aid, which in my mind would be coffee or vodka.
On that note, we're going to close and you'll hear much more from Marika in the coming months because her and Camille are going to be joining me more on the podcast. But thank you for being here, my friend.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. My question for you is, where do you feel the episode? Take a breath and just notice. What's your body doing right now? Sit with it. Let it speak to you. And let whatever comes up, come up. And your only job is to listen. For all the wisdom you need is right inside of you. To learn more about my work, you can visit holisticlifenavigation.com and sign up for my mailing list. You'll receive a weekly newsletter with specific monthly topics, free resources, and upcoming events. You can also follow me on Instagram. If you like my podcast, please leave a review and share. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you next time.
Did you know your food cravings are actually a doorway to your subconscious? They are. We tend to see cravings as something bad or something we just give into mindlessly. But when you embody your cravings, you're able to notice they're just blossoming from a certain place that has a certain need and needs your attention. Join me on Wednesday, May 29th, as I unpack this in a new webinar called Cravings Destigmatized. In this webinar, I'll help you learn the difference between a nutritional craving and an emotional craving, as well as how do we use cravings to get in touch with our unmet needs and any of our unconscious, unprocessed emotional experiences. It begins at 4 p.m. Eastern, and everyone who registers will get a replay. You can find the link in the episode details, and you can also go to www.holisticlifenavigation.com and click on events, and the information is right there. Hope to see you there.